Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly.
Love ties the whole thing around. No, it won't.
This opening is brought to us by John Mayer, The Heart of Life. But he's not going to be our featured artist today. Our featured genre is called Songs for Japan. Turns out 38 artists from all genres of rock music, country rock, folk rock, instrumental rock, jazz, fusion rock, all kinds of rock, put together a CD, and they're selling it with proceeds going to help the Japan aid.
We'll defend the silver lining.
So we'll be hearing more about this genre, about this CD, later on in today's program, and we'll close it out as well. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us today from www.triviaplane.com. Question number one, fill in the blank. Which musical Robert was born in Duluth, Minnesota on May 24, 1941? Big hint here. His real last name was Zimmerman. What's his stage name? Question number two, what's the name of this song I'm about to play for you? And the hint here, it was recorded by Simon and Garfunkel on their Bookends album and begins with the line, "Wish I were a Kellogg's cornflake," as you're about to hear.
Wish I was a Kellogg's cornflake, floating in my boat, taking movies, relaxed in a while, living in style.
What's the name of this song? The answers to these two very important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section for today's program, Today in Rock History, by BGORecords.com. And today is the Friday and Saturday of April 1 and April 2. What were the number one hits on these days in history? Well, back in 1964, it was the Beatles with Can't Buy Me Love. And back in 1977, it was ABBA, Knowing Me, Knowing You. Also in 1977, perhaps on Saturday, was the Fleetwood Mac with Rumors. And back in 1989, it was the Bangles at number one with Eternal Flame. And back in 1995, on this Friday and Saturday, it was Celine Dion, The Color of My Love at number one. If you were born on April 1, you share a birthday with Debbie Reynolds, Tammy. Back in 1932, born on April Fool's Day. And Rudolph Isley of the Isley Brothers, born on April 1, 1939, as was Jimmy Cliff, born in 1948 on April 1. Deaths on April 1 include Scott Joplin, Maple Leaf Rag. He died in 1917 on April 1. And Marvin Gaye also died on April 1, Sexual Healing, back in 1984. If you were born on April 2nd, you share a B-Day with Marvin Gaye, I Heard It Through the Grapevine, 1939. So he was born on the day after he died, April 2nd. Leon Russell, 1941, April 2nd, and Emmylou Harris, April 2nd, 1947. Miscellany in rock history. Well, it was back in 1957 on this day that the Everly Brothers released Bye Bye Love, a song that had been rejected by 30 other acts. And back in 1969, it was the Beach Boys suing Capitol Records for $2 million for unpaid royalties. And in 1997, on these 2 days, it was singer Joni Mitchell is reunited with Kilaren Gibb, the daughter she gave up for adoption 32 years earlier.
From both sides now, from give
Joni Mitchell. In local rock news, we see this article by Thomas Goldsmith, News and Observer, published on the 20th of March, 2011, entitled Kumbaya, the Song You Thought You Knew. Raleigh. When Wake County School Board members refer to attempts to reach consensus as singing Kumbaya, they're following a long practice of mocking the campfire favorite. The most widely known version of the song may deserve its limp reputation. The chorus only has four different words, and the music is numbingly repetitive. It goes, Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya, kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya, kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya, O Lord, kumbaya. But a University of North Carolina folklorist who has reluctantly become the go-to guy on Kumbaya say critics are missing out on the strengths of a decades-old song that has traveled from America to Africa and back, played a key role in the civil rights movement, and survived decades of bad renditions to remain a staple of the African-American church. It's more than just a good song. It's an important song, said Glenn Hinson, an associate professor of folklore and anthropology at UNC Chapel Hill, first appearing in print in a 1931 book by white women who had learned African-American songs from their nannies. In South Carolina and Georgia, Kumbaya has been mercilessly mocked since emerging in a far blander form as a favorite of the late 50s, early 60s folk music revival. The song has increasingly become a word to belittle the concept of compromise. About the song, well, it first appeared in print under the name Kumbaya, Y-U-H, in 1931 in a book published by the Society for the Preservation of Spirituals. First commercial gospel recording was 1953 by Madame Edna Gallman Cook. First folk versions, 1958 by the Folksmiths and Pete Seeger. Published versions, entire song or an arrangement, more than 150 by musicians including The Weavers, Joan Baez, Judy Collins, B.B. King, North Carolina-born rhythm and blues singer Inez Fox, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and John Phillips of the Mamas and Papas. African origins, none that folklorists have found. Apparently, the song traveled from the U.S. to Angola in renditions by missionaries who spread it across the continent. The article skips down. The song title became derisive shorthand last fall for a collaborative process that Wake County minority board members, Kevin Hill, wanted the entire board to go through together. I thought the direction of the board was to work together and find a consensus on student assignments, said Hill, a Democratic board member. But Republican Chris Malone disagreed, maintaining that Hill wanted them all to join hands and sing Guess What? UNC's Hinson, 57 years old, knew the mild campfire version of Kumbaya as a child growing up in the 1960s, but he cites a riveting version recorded in Alabama church in 1965 by civil rights activists following a bloody march on Selma, Alabama. Instead of lyrics about laughing and crying, the protesters sang, Someone's dying, Lord, come by here. Other verses referred to suffering and hurting. During the civil rights years, when group singing became a prime means of lifting spirits and expressing solidarity, Come By Here found its place alongside We Shall Overcome. Come By Here in North Carolina, Hinson has come to love the song. Black churches and gospel groups still sing as Come By Here. When Sister Lena Mae Perry joins her congregation in Come By Here at Long Branch Disciples of Christ at Newton Grove, the song expresses spiritual needs more deeply than the typical campfire version of Kumbaya. Yeah, the article skips down and ends with this. From its first publication in South Carolina, the song likely made its way north through special events at southern resorts, such as St. Simon's Island, where guests were treated to concerts of local African Americans singing tunes, including Come By Here. Hinson thinks the Kumbaya title arose from later efforts to link the song to African origins, which have never been verified. Gospel singers, some recorded in prison, have sung Come By Here from at least the 1920s to the present day. It wasn't until the late 50s and early 60s that it was released by Pete Seeger, the Weavers, Joan Baez, and other folk singers. In their versions, the tune became a warm-hearted sing-along that weakened its gospel fervor. I think one of the critical things is that in African-American communities, Come By Here kept its foundation in faith, Hinson said. When the song started being sung in the folk singing community, it was not a song associated with faith. The song became a simple call for togetherness, for community. A few weeks ago, the Wake County School Board huddled in an Apex conference room. Members hashed out concerns, they listened to one another, and they vowed to work together. Toward the end of the retreat, board chairman Ron Margiotti asked if a photographer was present to get pictures of them all hugging. "Well, I have the words. The last thing up here is Kumbaya, in case you've forgotten the words," said Jim Huge, the school board's meeting facilitator, as he pointed to a screen. Just kidding. This next article comes to us from the Wall Street Journal, published on March 24, 2011, by Jim Facilli, the next big name to come out of Austin. More than 2,000 acts performed here last week during the 25th annual South by Southwest Music Festival, and for five almost comically chaotic days, from early morning to well after midnight, some 100 venues, including churches, supermarkets, hotel lobbies, hotel rooms, private homes, backyards, vest pocket parks, parking lots, converted power plants, restaurants, and innumerable nightclubs hosted emerging acts of considerable talent, as well as a legion of middling musicians who may never be heard from again. Big names like Kanye West, Jay-Z, Snoop Dogg, The Strokes, and Jack White dropped in as if desperate to steal attention from the newcomers. Meanwhile, Austin resident Gary Clark Jr., who may be the city's next big music star, was an island of easygoing professionalism and, aw shucks, charm. He played eight sets, ranging from a solo gig for an industry group to showcases sponsored by Warner Brothers, his new label. As if immune to pressure, he flashed his blend of blues, soul, and rock, mixing fluid muscular guitar with a rootsy bark or a falsetto croon. Though his influences are plentiful, Jimi Hendrix, Freddie King, and Smokey Robinson are in evidence, throughout SXSW 2011, Mr. Clark came across as someone who is building something that is distinctly his own.
Cause your daddy's got that old shotgun and I don't want to make him mad. Why see what I need, baby, but I ain't gonna make my move. I see you, I need, baby, but I ain't gonna make my move. I'm just trying to stay alive, baby. Don't think that I'm being rude, no.
Gary Clark Jr. from Austin, Texas. So, what do you know about the response from the rock and roll world to the terrible disaster that struck Japan less than a month ago? According to www.news.yahoo.com, published on March 29, 2011, at least 10,000 people have been killed and over 16,000 are still missing. Both of these numbers are expected to rise in the coming weeks. And according to www.newsjams.com, published on March 18, 2011, northern Japan was without electricity, leaving about 1 million persons there helpless in near-freezing weather. Almost 90,000 buildings were damaged, including nuclear power plants, by the 9.0 earthquake and 33-foot tsunami. Governments throughout the world, including the U.S., have responded with condolences, expert assistance, and humanitarian aid. Celebrities like Sandra Bullock have donated $1 million in assistance, and Lady Gaga raised $250,000 in aid in just 2 days by selling for $5 each red and white wristbands bearing the message, "We pray for Japan." Meanwhile, rock artists have banded together to produce a 38-track recording called Songs for Japan. That is, in fact, the selected genre of music for today's program. The album went on sale at iTunes in late March. The songs selected for background music for this story are by the artist, but not necessarily the exact songs appearing on this album. From www.billboard.com on March 28, 2011, we see this article, Songs for Japan, the 38-track album featuring current hits, classic tracks, and live performances benefiting Japan earthquake and tsunami relief, has been selling briskly since its exclusive release at the iTunes Store on Friday, March 25, for the modest price of $9.99 for a 38-track album. That's pretty good. According to industry sources, the set moved approximately 25,000 units on its first day of release and could have shifted close to 75,000 units by the time the chart-tracking week concluded at the close of business Sunday, March 27. That, reported some, could land the album within the top five of next week's Billboard 200. The last major relief effort album, Hope for Haiti, which featured tracks performed on the Hope for Haiti Now telethon, moved 171,000 in no more than two full days upon its January 23, 2010 release, although that album featured newly recorded songs and/or performances and was bolstered by MTV's live telethon special. Songs for Japan is a joint effort among the four major label groups, Universal Music, Warner Music, Sony Music, and EMI Music. Proceeds from the album's sale will benefit the disaster relief efforts of the Japanese Red Cross Society. A physical version will be released as a 2-CD set on April the 4th. The 38 tracks on the compilation consist of 21 Billboard Hot 100 hits, including 16 top 40 entries, 9 top 10s, and 5 number 1s. Beyoncé's Irreplaceable, Love the Way You Lie by Eminem, featuring Rihanna, Katy Perry's Firework, Rihanna's Only Girl in the World, and a remix of the list's most recent chart topper, Born This Way by Lady Gaga. And her voice you can hear in the background right now. And then from this article, published in www.mtv.com by James Montgomery, published on the 25th of March, 2011, Songs for Japan includes Eminem, Justin Bieber, Lady Gaga, and more. Benefit album is now on iTunes, with proceeds going to the Japanese Red Cross Society. On Monday, we learned the names of some of the stars set to appear on Songs for Japan, a compilation album to benefit the ongoing disaster relief efforts in the earthquake and tsunami-ravaged nation. And on Friday, March 25, not only was the full roster of artists and song revealed, but the album was made available for purchase for $9.99 on iTunes. Get back on track. Pick me up some bottles of blue. Fickle freshman. Lady Gaga, Eminem, Beyonce, Madonna, the Kings of Leon, who are playing in the background right now, and Katy Perry joined a list of already announced artists like Justin Bieber, Nicki Minaj, and Rihanna on the album, which is available worldwide on the iTunes Store for $9.99. Proceeds from the sale of Songs for Japan will benefit the Japanese Red Cross Society.
in the still of the night, in the world's ancient light.
All in all, 38 artists lent songs to the albums, including legends like Bob Dylan, who you hear in the background now, U2, Bruce Springsteen, and the late John Lennon, country acts like Keith Urban and Lady Antebellum, rock artists like the Foo Fighters, R.E.M. and Bon Jovi, pop icons like Madonna and Pink, and top hitmakers like Bruno Mars and David Guetta.
It's like a cloud in the air. Tomorrow keeps turning around.
Hey, now, take your pills and hey, now, make your breakfast. Hey, now, comb your hair and off.
This is R.E.M., and they also appear on this album. All acts appearing on Songs for Japan and their labels and music publishers have waived their royalties and proceeds from the worldwide sales of the album to ensure the Japanese Red Cross Society receives as much support as possible. The JRCS will use funds from the album to support its ongoing relief efforts and for eventual recovery assistance to the areas hardest hit by the earthquake and subsequent tsunamis. iTunes will also donate its proceeds from the album's worldwide sales to the benefit of the JRCS.
I am flying off the star.
John Lennon, who you hear in the background, Imagine is playing in the background right now, and he's number one track on this album. U2 is number two. Bob Dylan, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Lady Gaga, Beyonce, Bruno Mars, Katy Perry, Rihanna, Justin Timberlake, Madonna, David Guetta, Eminem featuring Rihanna, Bruce Springsteen, Josh Groban, Keith Urban, The Black Eyed Peas, Pink, CeeLo Green, Lady Antebellum, Bon Jovi, Foo Fighters, R.E.M., Nicki Minaj, Sade, Michael Bublé, Justin Bieber, Adele, Anya. Elton John, who you hear in the background now. John Mayer, who opened today's program. Queen, Kings of Leon. Sting, Leona Lewis. Ne-Yo, Shakira, and Norah Jones, who will close out today's program. Once again, then, today's selected genre is Songs for Japan, and this is the 38-track CD available on iTunes right now for $9.99. Individual songs cannot be downloaded, but the entire album can for that very reasonable price, with the proceeds then going to help Japan during this necessary time. Today's final story is a rock and roll story finally told by Tammy LaGorse, from Cedar Grove, New Jersey, published in the New York Times back on the 19th of November, 2010. When Tommy James brought together the two incarnations of his backup band for a party to celebrate the release of his book this year, he said he felt little like William Shatner's long-lived series-spanning Star Trek character. "You have these two generations of Shondell," said Mr. James, 63, whose 1960 hits include Money Money, Crimsoning Clover, and Crystal Blue Persuasion. "And there we all were, me and both bands up on stage," he said. "I felt like Captain Kirk. The book Me, the Mob, and the Music, One Hell of a Ride with Tommy James and the Shondells, came out in February, and The Party in Manhattan, besides bringing together the two bands, one from Pittsburgh, with whom Mr. James recorded a string of top 10 hits, and the current group from New Jersey and New York, attracted friends and music business colleagues whose names are sprinkled throughout it. The partygoers did not know it at the time, but they had more than a book to celebrate. Me, the Mob, and the Music has not been a bestseller, even though its sales have been very consistent. But the book has resonated enough with a couple of influential readers to lead to plans for a movie and a theatrical production. I am amazed. I've been dumbfounded, said Mr. James, who lives in a sprawling single-story home in New Jersey, where he lives with his wife, Linda. Mr. James said he set out to write his autobiography in 2002 without detailing the corruption of Morris Levy, one of the founders of Roulette Records. That company is no longer in business, by the way. Mr. Levy was eventually convicted of extortion in 1988. One-third of the way through the original manuscript, though, Mr. James stopped writing. He estimated he was cheated out of millions of dollars at Roulette and said he decided, if we don't tell the Roulette story, we'll be cheating everybody. Tommy James. That story skips down and ends with this. I didn't know you could create this much commotion with a book, Mr. James added, but I'm thrilled. It's really a great honor just to be able to think about all of this. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Which musical Robert was born in Duluth, Minnesota in 1941? That's Robert Zimmerman. And his name is Bob Dylan. And answer number two, what's the name of the song I played? And that begins with, Wish I Was a Kellogg's Cornflake. That's called Punky's Dilemma, Simon and Garfunkel from their Bookends album. Nora Jones, she appears on the album Songs for Japan. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of rock music to feature on Rock Review, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. So long, until next time. My heart is drenched in